This is GM Authority Weekly, episode 67, recorded on June 16th, 2011. Camaros and Volts. GM Authority Weekly is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk for the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more. Visit gmauthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Weekly in the iTunes Store. It's time for GM Authority Weekly, where we cover all the General's news, and we do it weekly, hence the name. From Colorado Springs, Colorado, I am Alex Luft, and I'm joined by the regular panel of GM Authority Weekly co-hosts, starting with GM Authority Editor-in-Chief, who is coming to us from the D-Town. Manoli Katakis, good evening, Manny.
Hey, it's safe to say I've had an interesting 24 hours.
We're going to get to that in just a second, because I'm sure Homeland Security cannot wait for this story. But before we get there, let me also introduce GM Authority Opinion Desk writer and author and Camaro maven, Mr. Hilton Jorson, who are you coming in from your Camaro right now, Hilton, by any chance?
No, not today. Today I'm coming in from my lovely Bordeaux colored home office.
Bordeaux, nice. My lovely abode.
Yeah. Yes, and a little tired from some serious partying with a bunch of great, great people, great GM customers, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but doing well.
So speaking of partying, Manoli almost kind of had his partying life deprived yesterday.
Yeah, well,
taken away for the rest of his life, actually.
Yeah, the party was cut pretty short, pretty quick.
Do tell.
Let's hear it.
Real interesting. Okay, well, I had the chance to drive a Chevy Volt for a day, and you know, before I had to give it back, I want to take some pictures of it.
And as a real journalist would want to do.
Exactly, and I thought, what would be a better place to take a photos of an electric car than in front of an electric power plant? So that's exactly what I did, and I rolled up right in front of these right in front of the gates of the DTE.
That's the
basically right off on the side of the road there, but just enough to get a good shot of having the power plant as a background. Mm-hmm. So I perch it there, and I get one shot off before a security guard approaches me, and he goes, "Excuse me, you're not allowed to be here. You're trespassing." I'm trespassing. I didn't know I was trespassing. He's like, "Yeah, and you also can't take photos. You're gonna have to leave." And I was like, "Oh, you know, no problem. I'm on my way out of here." And he's like, "Well, hold on a second, because my managers and my superiors want to have a word with you." So I'm like, "All right, you know, here we go. I figured, you know, if I play it cool, you know, try and explain to them that I'm a journalist and that, you know, I'm driving it. It's a Chevy Volt, and I just thought it would be, you know, just a cool tie-in to have an electric plant with an electric car." But apparently that was way over everybody's head. And this older guy shows up, and I try to explain to him the same situation I explained to the first guy, who I'm pretty sure was missing a few teeth. I'm serious. They were yellow, they were brown, they were falling out. And I'm like,
"What's wrong with that? Poor guy."
Yeah. But that was like the first thing I recognized the guy. I was like, "All right, he's got some nasty teeth." But then this old guy walks up, and he, you know, he's pushing 70, 80.
Ooh.
And he doesn't seem to be all that capable of walking that well
either.
Still
working, though, huh?
Yeah, well, what else are you going to do, right? And they,
Bob Lutz.
He starts talking to me, and he basically lays down the same thing. He's like, "Well, what are you doing here?" I just told him I was looking to take some photos. I didn't realize I was trespassing. You know, I'm sorry for any kind of trouble I caused. And, you know, if you just let me be on my way, I'll be on my way. He was like, "Well, I need to see your identification. Got to take a license plate of the car, you know, this and that. So
you also want your passport and papillas?
You know, if I had them, probably. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, so I gave him my name, I gave him my ID. You know, I was like, go ahead, run it. I really don't care if you actually have the authority to run it, that is. Because, I mean, honestly, they both look like a bunch of rent-a-cops.
Respect my authority.
Yeah, but he's like, well, this is a Homeland Security issue, and you're not, and the power plants are protected by the Department of Homeland Security.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
I wonder if Bin Laden knew that.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything just kind of escalated right there. When he said that, I was like, oh, great, now it's federal, you know? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so. He was still cool with it. He's like, all right, we don't want to call the cops, or, you know, we don't want to call the police. We don't want to have to get you escorted. And
wait, is this the old guy or the guy with the no teeth?
This is the older guy. And he's telling me, he's like, all right, so just leave. And as I'm getting in my car, this third, you know, person, guard, lady, man, lady, showed up in front of me, like just blocks me in, you know, as I'm trying to drive away. And she's like a storm. And she's, you know.
What was she driving?
She's on a mission when she's getting
out
of
the car. Yeah, she was on a mission. This was like the mission of the year. You know, you don't get any activity. So you have to be like on your A game for when stuff like this
actually. You got to get the guy with the camera.
Right?
Might have a rifle in there.
You got to get the 22-year-old journalist who still lives at home, you know, who he's the bad guy. He's an evildoer.
Yeah, he's going to do some bad stuff to this plan.
So much bad stuff. And. Yeah, she was driving a black GMC Terrain.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Noted.
Noted. Watch out for black GMC Terrains. So she blocks me in, and she's, like, you know, basically waddling out of the car as fast as she can. And I do say waddling because that's exactly what she was doing. I mean, to describe her, she had, like, the really short haircut, shorter than my hair, and just this, more or less, it was a fupa.
Just the way I like them.
I'm just gonna go ahead and say it like it is.
Okay.
And
we're not like clean or anything, so you can say anything you want. We don't have a clean rating.
Yeah, of course not.
We can just come at it, come out of the gate.
But it was. I mean, it was terrible because she was all fire and brimstone. She's like, we ought to call the Border Patrol and the police, and this is Homeland Security, and you're messing with national, you know, integrity. Blah, blah, blah. We ought to confiscate your camera. Yeah, my D5000 Nikon over my dead body, you know?
Yeah, why don't you call the president, dude?
Yeah, I was like, you know, and at the same time, I'm like, look, your previous two, you know, people here already explained to me the situation. I was on my way out. Now, if you please let me go, you know, be out of your hair. Or whatever.
But like, she wants you to be in her.
Well,
hair.
She wanted to be. I don't know. She thought she was being a hero or something. She obviously, they're obviously everyone's bored.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's bored here.
The Wii in the break room broke.
The Wii in the break room broke exactly. And yeah, sure enough, you know, I get a call in the morning from a couple people saying that, hey, what'd you do with our Volt last night? And I'm like. Okay. Well, to say it honestly, I wanted to take pictures of it in front of the DTE Edison plant, and they're like, well, all right. We didn't think that would be a problem either. And I was like, well, yeah, neither did I. And apparently, it's a big deal. And I think DTE corporate called me too, but they didn't leave a voicemail or anything. I didn't bother to call them back. I didn't recognize the number, but when I Googled it, it was like, oh, this is a DTE corporate number.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't know. This thing blew up way out of proportion. Everyone kind of, you know, they couldn't see the situation really for what it was. Mm-hmm. And I understand everyone's trying to do their job. But, yeah, it was an experience. And I don't know if it's over with yet or not. But yeah, now I don't even want to like go to Canada and visit friends in London or even take a plane to Tennessee. Probably sure I'm gonna get flagged. I'm on the list now.
You're on the list.
Yeah, it's just like, oh,
you're
this
blackballed,
is,
buddy.
Exactly. This is the man involved in the Volt. This is the Volt incident.
Yeah.
This is the Volt guy.
Yeah, this is the Volt guy, exactly. Yeah, when the president visits town, they're going to be having, you know, me under watch.
Yeah, actually, they'll probably make you part of the presidential campaign that they're probably going to try to eliminate your type. You know, there's, that's going to be one of the platforms on which they run.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was my yesterday.
Nice. So how did you like the vault?
I liked it, man. I liked it a lot. Only having it for a day, I can't say that I used everything.
The way it was supposed to be used?
The way it was supposed to be used, or to its whole extent. I did drain the battery, and I started to use the internal combustion engine. And I found that the engine, though quiet, when you stand outside and you kind of like, you know, stand next to it, it sounds just like one of those house generators.
Yeah, and I think you know why that happens or why that sounds that way.
Why is that?
It's because it's running at a... You never stand outside of a car that's running at, you know, like 2,000 or 3,000 RPM. You always stand outside of a car that's running at, you know, like 1,000 or below. So I think that's why... And I noticed that too, but you can't hear it from the interior as far as in my experience.
Yeah, it sounds honestly just like that, but like a muffled... But even more muffled than that.
Right.
And yeah, and when I was... When the battery was totally on, it had like that hum in the TV is on but nothing's playing kind of way.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know that sound?
Mm-hmm.
Just like that. It sounds like electricity.
Right.
And I thought the car felt very maneuverable. I was actually, when I got inside and I drove it around even in my driveway, I was surprised how easy it was to move around. Like how small it was. It didn't look that small or feel that small, but it really, driving it, it was probably one of the smallest cars I've ever driven.
Yeah. It's a little bit smaller than the Cruze.
Yeah.
But I think it shares its wheelbase. So it, you know, it's just all in the overhangs.
Right. And even though with the wheelbase, it feels like a completely different car because of where the battery sits and how it's so low to the ground that the Chevy Volt, I mean, you take it around a corner and you just feel so confident because that gravity is so low. Like you feel no weight moving from the top, no tipping, no nothing, because everything is so planted already.
Yep.
And I thought that was really cool. Like if I had more of a chance to take that car maybe on like a more of a winding road, I would really have done it.
Yeah. I found the same thing. I mean, I love the way this thing turns and the way it also behaves in the highway.
How is it pretty quiet on the highway?
Yeah.
Oh, incredibly. But here's the thing. It's kind of like I don't know, it's kind of weird because when I'm driving on the road, you hit like a bump or something. That bump sounds louder than it usually does because usually you have other noises
that
muffle away that noise.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard it, I was like, "Oh man, and, you know, I couldn't tell if the suspension was really that rough or what." But I mean, it was surreal. To hear like the road more, even the tires turning, and when I drove my mom in it, she was impressed. She's like, "Wow, it's so quiet," and she didn't even realize it was on when the car was on.
I think
and
that's her next car right there.
Yeah, if we can afford it, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But when you turn the car on and off, there's an artificial sound that plays through the speaker. It's like this power on, power off sound.
Isn't it?
Like,
it's kind of interesting, isn't it?
That yeah, sound? I thought it was cool. It's very electronic sounding. Mm-hmm. But even before that, say you're just getting in the car, and you close the door. All of a sudden, this little display in the screen comes around, and you know it says like
with the Volt animation.
Yeah, with the Volt animation, it's playing like. Like you can hear like a stream and birds and like, you know, pretty wilderness green things. And, you know, that I was like, okay, that's a little tacky, but I'll roll with it.
Well, you gotta compete with a Prius somehow.
Well, the 420 friendly people will like that.
The 420 friendly.
The dope smokers.
You know, they have a different term here in Colorado because dope is actually legal here. Prescription. So, you know, one of those bodegas or, you know, legal bodegas, I guess, because they have a green leaf outside. So they just call it the Leafers out here.
Leafers.
Well,
yeah. I mean, Michigan is more or less legalized medical marijuana.
Yeah. Yeah. they follow Sean Paul's advice. So one other thing that I really like about the Volt is, I mean, call me funny, but I actually like the back seat. You know,
it didn't bother me either. You know what? It didn't bother me.
It's that it doesn't. It's not really a bench. It's actually just two captain's chairs.
Yeah.
Not as good as the ones in the front, but they're still, you know, separated by this kind of, you know, tunnel. But the
because the battery is sitting in between, right, between both.
The one thing that I did kind of find funny though is if you have something in the trunk that's a little bit kind of small and it kind of rolls around, it can get in that tunnel. It can kind of roll towards you, towards the driver. Yeah.
But there's a lot of space back there.
There is.
Yeah, I mean, you can fit a lot in that trunk. Yeah,
I love the way this car is designed. I mean, for those of our listeners who haven't played around with the trunk, especially, I mean, obviously you got to drive this thing, but besides the drivetrain, the powertrain, I think the way that the trunk is set up, it looks like a trunk, but it's not a trunk. It's a hatch, you know?
Yeah. So it's, but at the same time, like the roof line, it's really, it's sloped.
Right.
Just gradually.
Right. Yeah, and it's not as girly as a Prius, you know. That I think that's
girly nothing. It's like it's exactly. I mean, the Prius is just like a bad fashion statement.
Right. This thing is beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's very clean looking. Any angle you put at, you know, any angle you look at it, and it really kind of speaks more to like the early adopter, the person who is willing to spend, you know, $1,500 and wait 2 hours in line to get the first iPad.
Right.
This is the kind of person that's going to buy a Volt, not the same like willy nilly frilly, you know, Prius Hunter.
Well, that's the kind of thing that I spoke about on my with my Volt article. You know, it's really, you're going to pay more for this car, you know, but the one thing about it is, and this is the part I like, and the part that a lot of people don't understand or don't realize is that, you know, they could have got better gas mileage out of it or more mileage out of the batteries by making it look like a sperm whale, for example. But they didn't. They actually made it look like a normal car. And that's huge as far as I'm concerned because, you know, it's a big step in order to get people to look at these vehicles as just another normal vehicle. I mean, sure, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, but 5 years from now, it's not going to.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like people, it's like you say, you know, when you're talking about the next iPad or whatever, you're going to, you know, initial technology costs a lot of money. But, you know, if you look past that and buy into that, then it benefits society 5 years, 10 years down the road, because then we'll have the product that, you know, everybody expects to have today. But General Motors is certainly not going to, you know, continue to invest billions of dollars into a product if nobody is planning on buying it. So,
right. Or if that's not the way the market's going to shift.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that surprises me is how much people, first of all, don't understand the Volt and what it does. I mean, just today I was speaking to someone, you know, at a Chevy store, at a Chevy dealership, who knew about the Volt, but they thought it was just a hybrid. You know?
Yeah, that's just a hybrid. Like in the same, I had the same conversation with my little brother. He's like, well, what's the difference between this and a Prius? I was like, well, you know, the Prius might get better city and highway gas mileage, but this you might not have to use gas at all.
Right.
It's just like it's more than a hybrid. It's
your
an
gas
evolved
mileage may be infinity.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's a very sophisticated drivetrain. I mean, the fact that you can also plug it in. I mean, you can't plug a Prius in.
Nope. Well, they're working on it. Yeah, they're gonna have one out soon.
The PHEV.
It's still gonna look like a Prius.
Yeah, it's still gonna be ugly.
Well, and the second thing that I'm kind of surprised about is the way that this car, you know, it's kind of marketed. You know, we don't really see a lot on it on TV or on the web or anywhere else. There isn't a big advertising budget. But then people talk about it like as if this car is going to make or break GM. It's not going to make or break GM. You know, GM would be fine.
Well, they also talk about the car like they know it. Like if you ever, like Glenn Beck, yeah. What the other day he was ranting. Oh, GM, I've seen your crappy electric car. Okay, no one's buying it. Oh yeah, no one's buying it. They're selling as much as they're as they can produce. Right. I think the supply on a Chevy Volt right now is 5 days.
Right.
That's it.
So yeah.
Actually, it's the supply on the Cruze right now nationwide as of last week was 7 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hotcakes.
And that plant's going 24/7, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a three-shift plant, Lordstown. So, all right. So, I mean, I think that obviously GM is a hit here. It's just a matter of ramping up production. They recently announced that they're going to by the end of the year the 2012 Volt is going to be available nationwide
and Canada, right, Hilton?
And I Europe. Think in they're doing the promoting of it now, having a couple of cars running around. I think they're Canadian spec cars, and I think near the end of August you'll start to see them in dealer lots.
Manny, one last question. What do you think of that black belt line on the doors?
I like it because I think it gives the car an illusion of a lowered belt line.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's cool. It's just if you actually look at it from a certain angle and you realize that those aren't windows, that those are actually, it's part of the door, it kind of looks funky. But
yeah, you know what? I didn't like it at first. And that's simply because I was comparing it to the original concept car. Mm-hmm. And the original concept car, that was the actual belt line. And, it pulled in, had a very much, like the S80 Volvo, where the belt line sort of comes into the glass on the door. And, they used that black to try and mimic that, even though the design changed.
Right.
But now that I kind of look at the original design, it's in a sort of in the back of my head, and I look at what's there now, I actually like it as well. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to liking the fact that they didn't create a sperm whale here. They actually created something that does look like a normal car. And I think that's important for the future EV acceptance as a whole.
Yeah.
Well, I think also maybe with the next generation Volt, they're going to kind of get away from this whole like sunshine and butterflies approach, and it's just going to be like more business oriented. It's like, all right, we can cut the crap with the leaves and the birds and the water streams now.
Like the fact that some of the marketing of it, like the commercials, are they just market it as a normal vehicle. I mean, I've seen commercials that, they just matter-of-factly talk about the fact that you can plug it in and it's electrical and it's, it gas when you need it. I like the fact that they're going with trying to sell the vehicle as your everyday vehicle. I think that's important.
Well, that's one of the reasons why people buy the Cruze or the Prius, because it can be an everyday vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Now, did you guys hear anything from the fallout of the Leaf commercial where they show the guy filling up his Volt at the gas station?
Well, GM kind
of. Oh, speaking of fuel.
Yep.
I opened the fuel door.
Yep.
It does not tell you to fill up with 93. With premium fuel. So I could see that being a disaster.
Well, like an SRX turbo?
No, because the SRX turbo actually tells you to use premium.
Right.
This has no labeling on it whatsoever.
Hmm. So put the GM, put the label in the fuel door.
Yeah. Maybe that's a LPO, Manny.
maybe. I don't know. Oh, and another thing about the interior, some people aren't a fan of like this like touch sensitive dash,
plastic, yeah.
Center console. I like it for two reasons. It's not hard to use, and it's easy to clean.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
So
I like it because of the clean design.
Yeah, it's very flush, but I mean the benefits to at least like all this hard plastic stuff, This is a lot easier to clean than soft touch.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just make sure you have a nice microfiber towel because a terry cloth will kill that stuff.
Did you have the white console?
It was gray.
Gray, yeah.
Okay.
The one I drove was white here in Colorado. But, man, did you have a backup camera on yours?
I did not, sir.
So, just curious, because this is something that I forgot to pay attention to. When you put it in reverse, did the wing mirrors, did they tilt down when you were backing up?
I don't think mine did.
See, that's one feature that I think needs to be on there if there's a backup camera.
Yeah, backing the, even though it's a small car, backing it up is kind of a chore because it's got funky angles.
Right.
And there are blind spots.
So, Hilton, let's go back to your question about that gasoline-powered, what if everything were gasoline-powered ad that Nissan put out. What do you think? I mean, is this, does it even hold the credence?
Well, personally, if I was GM, I'd fight fire with fire and just let them have it. And that means, you know, creating a Volt commercial where, you know,
what if everything was electric?
No, just a Volt is going down the highway and passes 20 Leafs on the side of the road.
That'll be a good one.
It's out of energy, you know.
Have you heard? You could start it out with like, have you heard about the one with the Volt and the Leaf traveling to Vegas? Like, say they start in like L.A., you know, all of a sudden,
yeah, you know what,
and we'll stranded in the middle of the desert.
And they should use Sheryl Crow's "Leaving Las Vegas" video. Except that we can't get out of Las Vegas.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Exactly. Yeah, so...
So, I mean, but the reaction from GM... Manny, would you like to have a stab at that one? The answer by Mr...
Mr.
Jason Laird?
Mr. Jason Laird.
What do you say to that? He said, I completely forgot now. Let's see. GM Authority to the rescue. One second. I actually have the quote sitting right here. So he said, a car maker poking gentle fun at our product ignores tow trucks they need and rental cars they recommend as backup to their product. Via Twitter, ladies and gentlemen.
Right on, Jason Laird.
I mean, well, what else are you going to say to that? It's spot on.
Yeah, he's
a sharp fella.
He is quite the sharp fellow, as we know firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, moving on, we got a lot to talk about.
Let's take a quick break before you move on, because I feel that you need to get a sip of your Blue Moon. And Hilton, I don't know what are you drinking tonight?
Well, I've been crushing what I've got here.
Just a Diet Pepsi.
Well, I'm going to open up another one, while we do that.
I love the way that the sound of the bottle landing on the table.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another vehicle that was in the GM Authority garage, the Chevy Camaro convertible SS and V6. But before we do that, let's take a quick break. We'll talk about, I already said what we're going to talk about. I would like to tell you about the GM Authority blog and the GM Authority website. And if you're new to the show, if you're new to GM Authority, if this is one of the first times listening to the GM Authority weekly podcast, we'd like to remind you that we do have a blog that we update on in pretty much hourly basis, if not, a semi-hourly basis. So if you don't want to wait until the end of the week or whatever time in the week that we publish this show, if you don't want to wait until the show, you can catch the latest, the greatest, the best General Motors news, analysis, opinions, reviews, anything and everything to do with General Motors you can find on GMAuthority.com. You know, you're going to find unabashed opinions, unabashed news. You know, we're not with GM. We're not working for them. We're an independent firm and an independent publication. And
unabashed. Exactly. Unabashed news. So if we don't like what GM's doing, we say we don't like it.
We're going to tell it like it is.
Yeah.
So GMAuthority.com is the place to go to find out.
If you don't like the fact that we don't ask KISS or, try and get free stuff out of them or try and get them to say how great we are, then you know, go to somewhere else.
I think
we're getting plaques made in our
name.
Recognition.
Yeah, yeah, of being the best General Motors fan in the world, man. Oh, my God. We don't do that. No. So GMAuthority.com is the place that you will find that and a whole lot more. So check it out. All right, so Chevy Camaro convertible SS Manoli.
Yeah, buddy.
Mm-hmm. First yeah, of all, buddy. How much did was the sticker on that one?
42,000. Mm-hmm.
Right up my alley.
40, yeah.
Straight right out of college.
Yeah, straight out of college, right up everybody's alley.
You want to go halvesies?
Dude, I would love to go halvesies on that thing, except I would rather buy a Cadillac CTS-V.
Would you really? Well, you gotta yeah. You gotta spend more for that though.
Actually, you know what? I would, you know, above that, if I were to get a Camaro.
I'd hold out for the ZL1.
You know why? Because, you know, I told, you know, obviously most people know that Manny's a single guy, and I gave him a word of advice, you know, because you've got to start, you guys, you know, you're going to be starting families, getting married someday. And I told him, listen, you got to marry rich, and it's not going to happen if you buy a Camaro convertible. They're okay cars, but you get yourself into a CTS-V, you'll hook a good one. So.
Yeah,
that's why he prefers a CTS-V.
Is that true, Manny? Is that the only reason?
Well, no. Well, a very good reason. Horton's probably pretty much hitting the.
So you're just saying that you're a gold digger.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah.
So to all the females listening.
You know what? Why do you have to work your ass off to try and make money for 50 years when all you have to do is focus for the first couple of years of your adulthood? And then you're set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You sound like you've done this before.
No, actually. What I'm trying to tell you is to learn from my mistakes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I got to be the breadwinner, you see?
Yeah. So, all right. So that's fair advice.
Keep talking for a little bit, guys.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have to go to the bathroom or something? Probably. So, you know, since Manny drove the SS, I actually drove the V6 RS.
Convertible?
Convertible, yes.
You didn't have as much fun as I did because I had the manual.
I had the automatic, and it was a V6, and you cannot break the tires loose with a stupid automatic, even when you turn off traction control.
Wait a minute.
When you turn off traction control, mm-hmm. did you do the 7-second thing, or did you just do the double press?
I did both, but I did the one press,
yeah,
and it said the traction control's off, and I tried, you know, I tried some stuff with that, didn't work. Just like it was on a you know, if I hadn't had pressed it, yeah. and then I did the 7-second thing, and then the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. This thing is heavy.
Well, here, if you guys want to know the exact weight numbers for both cars, the V6 LT with the automatic weighs 3,986 pounds.
Jeez, that's a piggy.
And my tester with the manual, the SS, was 4,116 pounds. Fat.
Mm. Fat piggy.
Fat cars. I mean, these guys are. They're porky. They're powerful, but they're porkers. And basically, I ended up, you know, I managed to kick the tail out and do some drifting a little bit with my Camaro SS. But for the most part, the car just liked to do the power slide.
Yeah.
But did it handle like a coupe?
No.
God,
no.
Because this was, you know, apparently they spent a lot of time, you know, trying to ensure that the convertible had the same characteristics as the coupe when you're driving it.
Well, first of all, if you want to talk about, though, I mean, not the driving characteristics, but just the look and feel characteristics, mm-hmm. what is up with that A-pillar when the top is off? Manny, did you see that on yours?
Oh, how
that
the
weird
molding?
Material, yeah.
Yeah, it's scary looking. It's sloppily done.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's a lot of, like, you know, well, like hair splitting things about this car that I could go on all day about, but I'm not going to, because honestly, it's still a fun car. It's a blast to drive. I absolutely loved gunning it and then letting off the gas and just listening to that exhaust burble and pop.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was like one of my favorite things. I love just driving around with the LED halo lights on. I loved the fact that there was like fiber optics behind the plastic orange paneling in the door. So when the car was driving at night, the doors kind of lit up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I loved driving the car. It was fun. I got, you know, thumbs up, turned heads everywhere. Yep. Chicks loved it.
I got the same thing, only that mine didn't make as much noise.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I do believe that your V6 comes with the same tires that the SS does, the Pirelli P0s.
Yeah. But mine was the RS as well. So,
right. If you get the RS and the V6.
Yeah. And I mean, this thing was fully loaded, stickered 42,995. And yeah, it had the black stripes to go with the Inferno orange paint and outside. Mm-hmm. And in the interior, it had that same matching leather, the Inferno orange. So this thing was just, I'm smoking hot.
It was like a look at me magnet.
Yeah. I mean, 20 inch rims. Oh, and of course, one of my favorite features, a heads-up display.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, buddy. You know, if there was a heads-up display in the CTS-V, that would have made the car. That's the one thing I think.
Why isn't there a heads-up display in there?
I don't know, man. That needs to be there, like rolling update or something.
I think it will come at the same time that there's an intermediary engine between the V6 and the CTS-V.
You know, it's not happening.
Nah, I think never happening.
We're still playing catch up. This is all like, you know, the bankruptcy is playing a big role. I think that's why you're not going to see a lot of, you know, major updates until the next generation CTS comes out in, three years from now. And same thing with the next generation Lambdas. We're hearing now that you're not going to see the Cadillac Lambda until as late as 2015, when it's on a completely different new platform with all the other Lambdas.
Right.
Which at this point, you should just completely scrap the whole Lambda idea and utilize a rear-wheel drive architecture.
Right.
It makes no sense to me why they're doing it.
I don't know why. I really don't know.
Yeah. Did you have the Boston audio in your V6?
Nope.
I had the Bostons in mine. It kicked, but it's not a Bose.
No.
Not Bose, but it's good. It's loud and proud. Well,
it's not a Pioneer either, but
no.
It is. I mean, it does its thing. It makes it nice and loud. And you know what? One thing I did notice though in the when I had the top down, was that I had to really crank that system up like on the highway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm crazy. I know. I went.
Well, I enjoyed cranking it up because then the bass would hit and everyone, you know, it was a party in my car. It was
right.
You know, it's nice. Yeah. That's the other thing. A convertible loses a lot of its base when, you know, because you lose the top. And I know that they put a subwoofer like right behind the back of the back seat.
Right.
Like if you pull your back seat down, you're going to have this huge 10 or 12 inch subwoofer there. So how was it in the convertible with the top down? Because for me, I've got that Boston Acoustics system in my Camaro, and I found it fantastic. As a matter of fact, I found it to be the best stereo I've ever heard out of a GM vehicle.
You got to listen to those 5.1s.
Okay, but you know, for me, my Yukon has at the time was the great Bose stereo, and it just for me it sucked.
That's because it was a Yukon
mid-range. Well, still, you should be able to get pretty good sound out of a truck.
Yeah,
it's just should, especially, what does it have, like 11 speakers?
Yeah, exactly. But it's all mid-range. I mean, the nice thing about the BA systems is the highs are high and the lows are low. And and the mid-range is just right, I found. So,
well, you know what they say sometimes about Bose, no highs, no lows. You know, it blows. Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a fan of Bose. I think they do a good job, but it's just a different preference, you know. If you want that, you know, the boom, you know, if you listen to all the bassy stuff like
that, dirty rap music,
the booty rap that Manny listens to,
Bootylicious,
yeah,
Mulatto Butts.
If you don't know what we're talking about that little
watch Archer.
Reference. Just watch. Do yourself a favor. You have to watch Archer, please. It's the best. It's a show, just so you know. So, yeah, it's just a different preference, I think. You know, you have, like, you know, people who like bows, who are just more of the, you know, I like to play jazz and classic music in my speakers, and sometimes I play, you know, the pop and rap and rock. And then others, you know, they like the more bassy stuff, and, you know, I guess we fall into that category.
Well, so I listen to, like, an eclectic mix.
Yeah. So how did you like the stereo in the convertible with the top down?
I did the same thing Alex did. I blasted
it. Yeah. I didn't have the BA, but I just blasted it, and it sounded good.
Did you, Alex, did you, like, experience maybe, like, an over-tolerant amount of wind noise, maybe more than there should be?
No, when you have, I can't say I have. I took it up to about 85 on the highway. Maybe it's the way the wind was blowing and everything was working in my favor, but I actually experienced a pretty minimal amount of wind noise.
Yeah,
and just
same,
wind
same
in
here.
General.
Same here, but there's been complaints of, I guess, like real loud wind noise with the top up and even leaks. So there is that.
Yeah.
So basically, if there's like buffeting or something, you know, if you have a Camaro convertible and there's like buffeting or there's like, you know, a large amount of wind noise, it's not supposed to do that. So do your best, take it to a dealership now while it's under warranty.
Right. So, in summary, I mean.
Oh, and don't take it to a car wash, you stupid idiots! You're not supposed to take a rag tops to a car wash.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what kind of car wash, but just make sure there's no soap on it.
Yeah, you gotta. Yeah, exactly. No soap. Don't power wash it. You're gonna cut it.
Yep.
You know, you soap. It's not gonna dry all the way out.
Yep.
It's not gonna dry all the way out, and the stuff's gonna sit there in the sun. It's gonna completely kill your top.
Yeah.
Gotta wash this baby.
I actually made a mistake once in a neighbor's C70 when I was an entrepreneurial 13-year-old, started car washing business, thought I was gonna get rich. And I power washed the neighbor's C70 convertible, you know, the C70 ragtop. I power washed it. Oh, man. I ended up, not only did I end up messing up the top, but I also ended up messing up the rubber, the weather stripping along the doors where the windows join the doors.
Well, was this your first time using a power washer?
No, I was rushing.
I'd like to say you've come a long way since then.
Yes. I was 13 years old, my friend. So,
but yeah, all I gotta say,
I'll spend it off for the rest of my life.
I mean, like, I don't know what there is more to say about this thing. It's
awesome. It's
fun. It's a fun car. It's a fun car, but it's not the best car.
So,
you know, like, as a driver's car, driving enthusiast, you're not allowed to take a convertible because
Well, it's got that. You know, it's got that metal bar that the CTS does across the hood.
Yeah.
If you pop the hood, you look under there. It's got that metal
structure. I forget the name of – there's an official term for that.
The beam. Something beam. Support beam. Something beam. I know it's beam. It has the word beam in it.
Yeah, it has that. The ZL1 is going to have that too. And it basically, like, it compensates for the structural rigidity lost from chopping the top. Did you use the panel cover?
I did.
What'd you think of it?
Well, mine was filthy because actually I drove a filthy unit, I'm sorry to say. But it's kind of difficult to get it in there. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of difficult to fold up when you take it off. But otherwise, you know, it looks better with it on.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, I found it kind of awkward to fold back up. But
yeah, and the trunk is non-existent pretty much, you know.
Well, yeah, that's to be expected. But
so
if
you play hockey and you have to carry your hockey stuff with you, it's going in the back seat.
Yeah, top down back seat. You got your sticks up high.
Exactly. Don't look so hot.
Yeah, but I was gonna say that I kind of forgot sometimes that the top was up. Like, you know, say there was some rain coming, and I had the cover, you know, covering the folded top.
Oh yeah.
And like I would push the button, I'm like, why isn't it going up? And I see, and it's like trying to punch through, and I'm like, oh, I'm a genius.
Whoops! How did you find those latches? Were they a little bit difficult to latch on?
Yeah, they were a little bit difficult.
I wrestled with one of those things for like 5 minutes one day.
Really? I mean, it took me like 2 minutes.
Maybe I'm just stupid. I don't know.
No, it was. like they're in an awkward spot. They are, and they're hard to see.
Yeah, that was.
I mean, I'm surprised. Like, why aren't they glow in the dark?
Because you're not supposed to be taking the top off at night.
It's only a daytime thing. What if you want to put it back up?
Yeah, that's true.
Or something. I don't know. It's like there's a lot of things. I mean, it's not
a deal breaker.
It's not perfect, but yeah, again, it's not a deal breaker.
Yeah.
You have $43,000 LS3 engine, 426 horsepower.
You can get a vet for that much.
You're driving one of the best looking cars on the road. What more could you ask for from a muscle car?
Yeah. I don't know. So Hilton, I'm just curious, going back to our statement about the marrying into money thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think the Camaro isn't worthy of respect from the Rich Girls Club?
Because Rich Girls Club like imports
because it is a made in Stuttgart.
Yeah. Or
neither is the Mercedes ML.
Okay.
But. Who cares about the Mercedes ML?
Really? Rich people, you know, this kind of goes back to my article about status and how Cadillac needs to acquire it compared to the German competition.
It'll come with a strong lineup.
Well, hopefully. Wealthy people drive German. End of story.
Or Lexus. Lexus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's almost wealthy.
No, If it's an LS,
but
no, dude, everything. The IS, the GS, the LS, the CUV lineup, I put those on the same level as Mercedes and BMW. And at this point, I wouldn't even put Audi at the same level as those.
No, you know, here's the reason I'm going to put Audi, and it has nothing to do with performance or engineering. It has everything to do with design and style, and Audi trumps everybody.
But not price. That's the thing, is that price...
You know that A7 starts under $50,000, and you can get over, like, I think 30 miles per gallon.
That's the thing, is that luxury shouldn't be a bargain.
When a car looks like that, it starts to get a little hazy, because the A7 is so damn good looking. It's just like, you know what? The fact that it's this good looking and I can get it for under $50,000, it's a steal.
But it goes back to that joke. I don't know if I've told you this before. It's a Russian joke. And, you know, you have two businessmen in a meeting sitting, across from each other. And they both realize that they're wearing the same exact tie. So, businessman A turns to businessman B and says, "Hey, nice tie." And the guy says, businessman B responds to businessman A and says, "Yeah, thanks." So then businessman A asks, "How much you buy for?" And he says, $5,000. And then businessman B says, "Ha, mine's better. I bought mine for $15,000. So it's all about price. And when it comes to luxury, when it comes to luxury, it took you a while to get that one. Hilton's still writing it down.
No, I had to wake up and laugh. Sorry.
Oh, so I put you to sleep. I'm sorry.
I'm still sleeping.
Wow. Jeez, I didn't know you could talk while you're sleeping. You know, it all goes back to price. If it's luxury, I think, Hilton, this is the point they're trying to make, is that, not you're trying to make, but you've made. It's when it comes to luxury, you can't be a bargain luxury player. You can't price your cars, you know, at such a low price point, like Acura, for example, that it becomes like a little bit confused. You know, it's also about what is most expensive. And if you get something that's expensive as well as good, you know, like a Mercedes, that's why Mercedes sells or BMW sells.
Well, still, I mean, you're talking about a car that starts, like, I think it starts at 47.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the still A7 is one thing. I just, at this point, I wouldn't.
Well,
I
wouldn't. The only thing to add to that is Hyundai is trying to break that mold. I mean, you want to talk
about
the new
stuff.
That
will be the poor man's luxury,
It will, but the poor man's luxury used to be like an upscale, a Buick Roadmaster, a Mercury or something like that. Yeah. I mean, the cars that Hyundai's coming out with are, you know, every bit as good as a Lexus, I will say.
Yeah, well...
So. Yeah,
Equius. That's the only thing that I can. The Equius and the Genesis are as good. Everything else.
Well, here's the thing about the Equius.
No, but I mean Yeah.
Well, if you listen to guys, around the automotive, mainstream media that have that are using them and testing them is they have problems because they still are with those Hyundai dealers, and they're not the Equus customers are the same kind of people that are accustomed to the kind of service that they're going to get at a BMW, Audi, Lexus dealer.
Let's kind of look at the facts on that one, though. When in the Equus, to sell the Equus as a Hyundai dealer, you need to meet certain requirements, and those requirements include you need to have one dedicated salesperson for the Equus.
Right? Yeah, I know about that, but still, like when it comes to like scheduling, maintenance, and stuff like
everything else boils down to the same thing.
Yeah, it's a cluster.
Yeah, but you know what the point is that Hyundai is learning, and they learn fast.
Right.
I mean, they learn crazy fast.
It's because they're driven. Only,
well, I wouldn't say they learned, though, Hilton. I mean, I think they learned in terms of design, but I don't think from a driving perspective. I mean, I've driven every single one of their new cars except for the Equus. And when it comes to driving, it's not still. I mean, for example, look at the Elantra. Not as good as the Cruze or the Focus.
Who's the fastest growing market share in North America?
Well, it's Hyundai Kia, of course. I understand that. But, I mean,
the fastest growing brand. It's not Hyundai Kia. It's Buick.
Yeah, individually, yes.
The Saab side, but Saab's, since they're marginally, they're selling so low.
Saab doesn't count. Come on.
Yeah, they're spunky. But
I mean, right. The reason I brought this up is, I mean, going back to the whole thing with, you know, mirroring Rich, it's just sticking in my mind, I guess. You know,
so
Hyundai, it won't work in a Hyundai. That's it.
No, it's not going to work in a Hyundai.
Right. Exactly. Still.
Will you be able to marry Rich at your Oshawa open house?
Let me think.
Should have come to that one.
I think there was a few people where, you know, if I was single, I would have had the opportunity.
Were they driving Camaros that were either rat rotted or gold plated?
Oh yeah, did you see the rat rod Camaro?
It wasn't there. I couldn't believe it wasn't.
You didn't
there,
go there? What?
No, I didn't see it.
Did Chris Tribuzzo not give up his ticket and?
Chris Tribuzzo, let's just say he was there in image and not in person.
In body, in spirit, but not in body.
No, he was there in image, a like image, but he wasn't there in person, which kind of surprised me, but that's kind of off the topic.
Off the mark.
But it
went off without a hitch then?
Well, first of all, tell us what this was for those of us who don't know.
Well, I'm going to really back it up a couple of years. You know, at the time, a few years ago, Gary Kauger was vice president of manufacturing at General Motors. And, you know, with respect to plants, he was the top dog. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I think Bob Lutz, his new book that just came out, he's recently credited in that book, Gary Kauger, in terms of what he did to optimize global production and introduce concepts in manufacturing, such as, you know, flex lines, not only with production lines, but also like stamping plants and whatnot. So, and the Oshawa plant is a shining example of the fruits of his labor. So anyways, a few years ago, you know, I started something called the Buyer and Builder Meet and Greet. And, you know, I wanted to be able to somehow, you know, have people go through plants and really see them for themselves what occurs inside a General Motors plant. Now, some of these plants, you know, they've been having tours on their own initiative for years. I mean, over decades. But other plants like Oshawa, I mean, this place was like locked up, like a max, a super max prison. Like nobody was allowed in, and
it was like
tight
security. It was like Auschwitz.
Exactly.
ETE energy.
Exactly. So, you know, I wrote to Gary. I mean, Gary, actually, on a personal note, Gary and I go back decades. And so I wrote to him and I said, you know, there's benefits in opening up the plants to the consumer. You know, here I was trying to get...
Wait, this was your idea?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'll have a little piece of it. I will claim a little piece of it, but I'm sure that many other people in and outside of GM were lobbying just as much as I was. So anyways, I said to them, you know, there's benefits of having the plants open to the public. And at the time, these, you know, the people that I had were people that had put money down on a product that they didn't even know if it was going to be around or the company was going to be around. Like we put a deposit down in the fall of 2008, and, you know, General Motors went bankrupt, you know, in the spring of 2009. But at the time, you know, we didn't even know if, you know, the car was going to be made or not. I mean, it was touch and go. So, you know, the people at the time who put their money down in the fall, I think there was a total of 6,000 people who had actually pre-ordered a Camaro before they even started building them. You know, they basically, you know, had faith in the product, had faith in the company, such that, you know, you're putting money on a car that you haven't even test drove, let alone looked at. So, you know, I said, you know, there's merits in writing to Gary. I said, there's merits in having, you know, people, your customer, opening up the doors for your customer to go through. I mean, here you had a bunch of people who, you know, who had faith in you. Why don't you show a little bit of faith in them and thank them somehow? So, you know, things are progressing there, but during the whole bankruptcy, Gary retired, and Diana Tremblay, who was, I guess, executive director at the time of manufacturing, now became vice president of manufacturing, and she is still the current vice president. So, you know, basically I kept my lobbying going and contacted her and a few times and said the same thing. I said, you know, there's value in opening up all your plants to all your customers. Not only does it benefit the customers, but it also benefits the GM worker. You know, you work in a plant all day. When I was a student in college, I had a great job in a paper plant. And once you walk in a plant, I mean, it's like another world. You don't see the outside. You're just working on the inside, same people, same things going around you. And bringing people in, it totally changes your outlook of work. And so, you know, I wrote to her with the, and actually Mark Royce as well. And I said, these are the benefits of bringing people, opening up your plant and bringing people into it. And I made my points. And then after a year of bugging the crap out of her, she finally came out and you know, created this program. Now, you know, like I said, maybe a little piece of my influence is in the whole program, but certainly wasn't all me, but certainly a little piece of my influence was there. So I was really happy, not only that, you know, the Camaro plant was opening up, but all the plants were opening up. And General Motors actually has a website that show the scheduling of these open houses at the various plants. And I think we're going to put it in our daily newsletter somewhere there. So yep. if you're not you know, registered to get our newspaper or a newsletter, do it, and you'll get the info. And if you live in a near a plant that's having an open house, I really recommend that you go and experience it. It's just fantastic. And
absolutely.
With respect to the open house that just occurred this past weekend in Oshawa. For those who don't know, Oshawa currently has, it's actually two assembly plants next to each other. And one, and I think we wrote about this in the past, one of the lines is called the consolidated line. And it, you know, it has the Impala and the Equinox And the other line is the Flex line, and it has the Camaro and Camaro convertible, Camaro coupe, and the Buick Regal. So it's just incredible to be able to see. You know, we basically toured the Flex line because obviously it was a Camaro homecoming weekend, and you know, we were more interested in that. But it was a fantastic peek into you know, how GM develops or assembles cars. There was we saw way more than I had ever dreamed of. I mean, honestly, when I first thought about doing, you know, GM doing something like this, I said, you know what, just open one door, let us walk 1,000 feet and go out the other door. But we actually, our tour was at our own leisure. You can go, you know, they had marshals every 50 feet along the route, and it was actually a mile long. It was a mile of walking. It was incredible. So we didn't see the paint plant. We didn't see the stamping plant. And
there's a new wind tunnel there, isn't there?
I didn't hear about that.
I don't think it's there, no.
No. No, that's in Michigan.
Yeah, that's in Michigan.
Yeah, I know that there's a wind tech center. They built a new one at the tech center. And they also built a new crash thing there. Anyways, we weren't allowed by the paint plant because, you know, they didn't want to, you know, us to get our, you know, our hair into the paint. Then we weren't allowed in the stamping plant because, you know, there's a lot there that is not for, you know, they're
a lot
trade.
Of stuff that could go wrong.
Well, yeah, you can be flattened into like a piece of paper, thin as a piece of paper. But the other thing too was that, you know, it's a trade secret how they stamp, for example,
yes, the shoulders,
the rear, right, the rear quarters on those Camaros.
Are those the shoulders or the hips? How would you?
Those are the hips.
Hips. Okay.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
And you know, don't forget the side of the,
isn't it?
Huh?
That's hydroformed.
I forget. But the thing is that whole side. I mean, on the Camaro. You know, the A pillar and the B pillar and the quarter are all one piece. You know, there's no, you open the door and you look around the whole door jamb, there's no seam. Like, there's no welded pieces. You know, 20 years ago, you open the car door and there's like 3 or 4 welds because, you know, you had all these different components. Now it's just one piece. And not only that, but if you ever looked at that component of a Camaro, from the back to the front, let's say it wasn't on the, or even if it is on the car, you would notice how incredibly deep that quarter is. And it's very difficult if you're ever trying to form a piece of sheet metal. It's difficult to get that depth without putting in, you know, stressing the metal such that, you know, you have things showing up on the metal such as metal fatigue and even tears. So they did they didn't want us to see how they do that. But if you want an idea on, you know, that particular plant, you know, National Geographic has a show called Ultimate Factories, and they've done the Corvette plant in Kentucky, but they also did the Oshawa plant. And you know, I recommend everybody going over there and either downloading it from National Geographic's website. I think they only charge $1 or $2. It's about an hour long. It's fantastic. And just the technology there that we saw and all, like when you walk into the plant, we were met with the plant, the vehicles being, they were all in sheet, you know, just sheet metal body in white. And more or less, you know, the doors and the hood was on it, but that was it. It was just pure sheet metal, going through the quality control of the sheet metal, ensure everything's hunky-dory. And then it went through from there. It went out to paint. Now, we didn't get to see paint, but the one really neat thing about the Oshawa plant is they built a new paint shop maybe 8-10 years ago. And they built it on the other side of the street. So how do you get these bodies from one plant or one building into the other building across the street. You've got a public street that you can't block off. So what they did is they built this huge overpass or transom of connecting the both buildings, and the line actually runs to an elevator. So, and it's all computer controlled. Like once the body's all done with the sheet metal, it goes, actually they have an elevator and the body goes up about 80 feet high, automatically runs into this overpass and goes over to the paint plant, gets painted, and then comes back from this overpass and comes back down. And it's all painted. And then we got to, it was just incredible just to see that, like how bodies are lifted up and down. And
I just got my jaw dropped just listening to you talk about it. It's really cool.
Yeah. And it's, done like it's nothing. You look at this equipment and it's all, automatically doing it. And, the robotics and the computers keep track of everything. Like, and don't forget, this is a flex line, which means you've got a Camaro, and then right behind it, you got a four-door Regal. And then behind that, you got a convertible Camaro. So, and every time it runs down the line, you've got to have the proper equipment coming in. So what happens is, for example, when they come back from paint, let's say for a Regal, for example, it's painted. The first thing that's done is the doors are pulled off the car, given build sheets for those doors. And then they actually are sent on their own little conveyor belt up to the top floor of the factory, where there's people up there who are assembling the doors. So they're putting everything in the doors, from the power windows and the seals and the interior panels, the locks, whatnot. And then while they're doing that, there's people putting the trim into the body. So they'll put all the seals on the vehicle once it's painted, and more or less the complete interior of it. And then the doors come back down, and they just happen to come down at the right point, with the car that, it originally came off of, and the guys bolt the doors back onto that same car, and then it moves forward. And then with the drivetrain, wow. It's more or less done the same way, like in most plants is they'll build the drivetrain or the sub-assembly of the car, where you'll have the front and rear suspension cradles, and they're built separately at an OEM, and we'll talk about that in a second, because I actually had a bunch of people go over and tour that. And anyways, they're built, and the engine is put on the sub-assembly. The transmission is put on the engine. The drive shaft is linked up to the rear end. There's no tires on it, but the brakes are on it. The exhaust is on it. So, and this is on a robotic tram. One of these things that just, it looks like it's just following a route on the floor, like a painted route on the floor. And then it just lines itself under the appropriate body. And the body starts coming down, and the guys start bolting it all up. And that's really the first time that it more or less becomes a vehicle. And then it's the final stuff, putting in the gas tank and putting the wheels on and firing it up for the first time. That was really neat to see. There's a certain area where, they fire it up for the first time, and you get to, see if they start or not. Sometimes cars don't start for whatever reason. And, when you get, there's an area at the end of the line that they just pull it off to the side, and they've got some technicians there that, sometimes it's a lot to do with the software, and then they just, reinstall the software to get it going or whatever, and off you go. So it was a really cool experience. Workers at the Oshawa plant are unbelievable. fantastic, fantastic people. They were extremely friendly. Anybody could ask them anything you wanted. How did this, how do you do this? How do you do that? Like, for example, I knew a lot of people at that Oshawa plant, and they kept asking people, you know, how do you put the VINs on the motors, or where do you do it? And nobody knew, because they just didn't, they've never done that job. You know, there's a few thousand people working there, but you know, at the plant, you know, I got to see where the engines are being prepared, and I talked to one of the technicians, where do you put the VIN on the engine and transmission? And he showed me the station on the line and how it's done. It was just, you know, there's so many things that are really cool about the plant. And, you know, just talking about, you know, quality control with General Motors when they're building a vehicle, along the line, there's a bunch of, you know, those little tents that people put up in the wintertime when they put the car in, if they don't have a garage. Well, there's that sort of thing along the line every, I don't know, 1,000 feet or whatever, you'll see one of those things. And the first, the one I really noticed was in the trim area, and there was already like door seals and stuff like that on the car. And I said, like, I thought all that was, it's, you'll see a whole bunch of bright lights in this like tent like thing, and the car goes through it. And I'm going, like, why is that? Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, they wouldn't be checking for flaws in paint, because it's already come through paint. Like, paint would have its own thing over at the other building. Right. And so,
its own quality control there.
Exactly. And this one here with trim, what it was, I asked the guy, what's going on in there? Is there a guy just checking for whatever? He said, no, actually, there's 33 cameras in that little tent thing.
Booth.
And they take, yeah, and they take pictures of various areas of the car. And that picture becomes a mathematical equation that gets compared with whatever their baseline equation is to determine whether things are where they should be or missing, you know? And so that when it comes out, it's flagged as, you know, this trim piece or whatever the component is, it's flagged that, you know, somebody has to go back and take a look at this to make sure that, you know, it's right. So that was cool. And I mean, they had a, you know, this
no
was
kidding.
All. So as the car is built, every step, it goes through one of these camera things where it, you know, they do the quality control check to make sure that everything's where it should be. And don't forget, we're dealing with multiple models. So when a Camaro convertible goes in, it goes and looks at Camaro convertible constraints. And then when right behind is a four-door Regal, so the cameras start taking pictures of the Regal and it compares against a Regal. So it was really, really cool that way. And like I said, the guys were really friendly. Even the some of the marshals on the line, a lot of them were retired GM workers, a lot of them were management. They didn't mind talking, you know, had any question you had. You know, there was none of this, oh, you know, I can't really say this or that. It was like they were totally open about the job and what it entails, and just extremely, extremely fascinating. It was incredible. And that occurred on the Friday. And then on the Saturday, basically, they had a just a Camaro judging event where and Firebird judging event. And Saturday afternoon, I took about 100 cars over to the Martin Rea plant in Whitby, where they make the suspension assemblies for the Camaro and the Buick Regal. And so, you know, we got to see how they, you know, how they the sub assemblies are put together. And while we were there, you know, we happened to see a manual like this. We happened to see the rear end of the upcoming ZR1 or ZL1 Camaro. So that that was really neat to see. And I mean, this thing is going to be a monster. I mean, the rear end is, they got half shafts on the thing are, you know, the size of, like, the middle of the half shaft was size of, you know, like, you know, the, like a Red Bull can. That's the middle of the half shafts. And the center pig was like cast iron, just this massive unit, and it's going to have its own liquid or oil cooler on it, and huge Brembos, of course, biggest stabilizer bar. So, you know, hats off to Martin Rea plant. I mean, I've been going, taking people there for 3 years now. They put off a wonderful spread there. You know, GM customers are appreciative of, you know, you got to realize that, you know, only I think 40% of the, or 60% of the car is made or assembled by GM. You know, the rest are all OEMs. The only thing that, you know, in terms of components of a Camaro, you know, some of the automatic transmissions, the engine, and of course the body are pretty much the only things that GM's responsible for creating. Anyways, to be able to see the sub-assembly of the Z01 rear end was pretty cool. We didn't see the bigger Brembo brakes for the Z01, but we did see the new red caliper, Brembo calipers for
Synergy. Who was the guy series that got to drive it?
It was I forget his name. Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. But anyways, General Motors, you know, they auctioned off a lot of neat memorabilia during the event on the Saturday on the car show. And one of the auction items was the opportunity to actually drive the ZL1.
So you had to pay for it?
He did, yeah. Through his teeth. But anyways,
how much?
Don't quote me on this, but I believe he paid $800.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to get that thing for a week and I'm going to pay about $800 in fuel. So
yes, you will. But, you know, the car's,
that's it.
Beautiful car, except for, you got to get rid of those stupid lights down in the, imitation air ducts there in the lower part, but other than that,
you don't like the football lamps.
Those lights,
yeah, looks just ridiculous.
What?
It looks like an afterthought.
The car wasn't flashy enough.
No, everything else is fine.
You know what they need to do, Hilton? They just need to make them pink for you.
Well, you know what? I think like what I like is I think I don't know if you guys remember the Leno car. Do you remember the turbo, twin turbo V6 car? Silver one.
Yep.
Well, when you look at the air ducts in the front of that, they have two lights there.
Yeah.
And just a little more. It flows design wise a lot better than these, you know,
stacked lights.
Fog lights. Yeah, stacked fog.
Oh, you're talking about exterior lights. I'm
daytime
sorry.
Running lights. Yeah, on the outside in the front.
I thought you were talking about the interior.
No. Anyways. You know, and the other thing about the interior is, I mean, they had the one there with the velour interior or whatever it's called. And, you know, it doesn't look too bad. And I mean, a lot of people are, meh, they can do without it. But it's an option, just buy leather. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But if you don't like it, I mean.
I want a pet suede.
You just want to have, like, a little pet camel.
Suede shifter. Suede wheel, I mean, that makes it like as a and it just feels so comfortable to drive with.
I want to sleep in suede.
I want to be friends with it.
Well, you know, the thing is, suede will hold you in a car a hell of a lot better than
you'll hold the suede wheel.
Yeah,
much better than you would leather.
Exactly. So
especially when your palms sweat when you're going freaking 150 miles an hour.
Yeah, so it's form and function, you know, with respect to this weight. And if you don't like it, buy leather. You know, I don't know how many people plan on buying this car to actually race it. I think, you know, it's more for, you know, somebody who likes to have the ultimate Camaro.
Right. Well, I mean, on that note, at that event, at the the open house, that they actually, or semi-actually announced, Al Oppenheiser,
mm-hmm.
Announced the fact that the ZL1 will have an automatic transmission optional, mm-hmm. as well. I mean, that speaks to your point that, you know, this is going to be more of a mainstream car, and they had to do that. You know, the GT500 is available with an auto.
Yeah. Well, they had been, testing the automatic transmission from the very beginning. I mean, some of the spy, I think the first spy shot of the first test car, was the automatic ZL1. There were lots of people asking for the automatic, and I think it will make a difference into the sales numbers. So,
agree.
Good on them. At the same time, it castrates the car.
Well, it does, but just don't buy it if you don't want it. That's it.
At the same time, you look at the CTS-V, and mm-hmm. even though that it comes with the automatic, I think the automatic is quicker to 60 than the manual.
Yeah, but it's nowhere near as fun.
Oh, God, no.
Right, but bottom line, they've got to move sales, because I think, when this thing finally comes to market, it's going to need every trick in the book to sell it.
Yeah.
And that's only because, Ford has already countered with respect to the future performance the horsepower numbers for their 2012 or 2013.
I think it's in
13. Yeah. And so, which leads to the other announcement which Al made, and that was that the car is going to have much more than 550 horsepower. Mm. So, but he didn't state what exactly. So, and I understand why, because, Ford comes out and says, our big dog is going to have 630 horsepower, and the Mustang's lighter than the Camaro. I'm glad I don't have to deal with that. I'm glad I'm not John Fitzpatrick with having to try and first price the car, and secondly, you've got all this built up. Not demand, but I would say built up assumption that right. This car is going to be a Mustang killer.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah, I get asked that probably once every day. Will the ZL1 kill the GT500? Will it eat it alive?
The current generation GT500, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Did you hear the rumor that the next generation Mustang is going to have an IRS, independent rear suspension?
I heard a rumor that, and I, this would be crazy, but I heard a rumor that it's an option.
Oh, wow.
What?
Hmm.
Really?
So, yeah. So I don't know. Huh. Personally, I wouldn't do it if I was the Mustang folks, because, they got a little niche going, and it's going to make the car heavier for one thing.
And it's going to make it less stable when you put more power down.
And, if the car
does the Challenger have a fixed axle or an IRS?
No, it's an IRS.
Okay.
But, and the Mustang, I mean, everybody knows if you want a drag car, your conventional rear end.
You've got to have the fixed axle if you want to drag.
Exactly. And so, and that's what the Mustang has. And I think, they have a little niche there that if I were them, I'd keep it, because your competition all has IRS now.
And it's not just that. They've pretty much perfected the way the fixed axle can drive. When you look at the Boss 302 especially, like this thing, when they say that it'll beat an M3 around Laguna Seca.
Mm-hmm.
Mazda Raceway. That's
Laguna freaking Seca.
Yeah. That's...
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, and if people go onto YouTube and do a search or watch some of the videos from some of the magazines on the new, the latest Mustang, they're blown away by how it handles around corners for a fixed axle. So, you know, I wouldn't do it. They're not losing much. You know, they don't have much to gain by doing it. You know, they're going to have to sell the car at a higher price point. The car's going to be heavier. It's not going to be that much better performance. So I was like, why friggin' bother?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the other thing, the other announcement from the open house was that the performance traction management feature is going to make its way into the ZL1 from the Corvette ZR1.
Right.
Well, yeah, we expect that.
But not officially. It was never officialized. And this was, like, you know, people were like, oh, is it going to come? I remember reading some comments on some forums, like, well, finally, now that I know it's coming, you know, now I'm going to go and put my deposit down. Even though they may not be taking deposits at this time, but, you know, whatever.
Well, anybody who thinks this car is coming out in the 40s is in for a shock.
Basically, you're cross-shopping between a CTS-V and...
Well, I don't know if it'll be that much.
Maybe 10 grand cheaper.
Yeah, I'd say so.
But then again, at that point, like when you're shopping between 50 and 60, what's another 10 grand?
Well, that's why they need to really increase the power on this thing.
I think that...
Well,
yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is what's Shelby start at? 49, something like that?
Yep, 49.
Yeah, and then you add all the shit on it, and then you're looking at mid-50s.
Right.
Because Shelby doesn't have the big brakes. You don't have the track pack. All that you add to the car.
Well, yeah, it depends on...
I would say to hike the price up of the CTS-V, but it's not worth it.
No.
At least from what the interior quality features, it's not worth it.
No.
There's not enough technology. There's not enough, I don't know, of a wow factor on the inside.
I think they should be focused more on, you know, the Corvette and what.
Well, that's getting a price all around 2012 models.
That's getting a price. Yeah, and as well it should. I mean, I think, you know, the ZR1 should be, you know, at least 160,000.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you want to talk about the CTS-V. The CTS-V is underpriced. It's a bargain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cadillac, we were talking about this in the beginning of the show with the, you know.
What's the cost of an M5?
The new one is going to be about 100 grand. Actually, if you do the conversion, they just announced pricing yesterday for the European model. That's going to be 100,000 euros, which is 150,000 bucks.
Whoa.
You know, conversion wise. So it's probably not going to convert directly, but when it does, when they do release the pricing, it's probably going to be 120.
What about the outgoing?
Yeah, I think it'll 90. Be. I think it'll be 120.
Yeah, outgoing model Manny is 90.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that will explain why you don't see a lot of those.
Yeah.
All right, but so like obviously, like, you know, the high performance Corvettes are, you know, there's too much value there, and that would moving that up the market. Would give them some breathing room for the CTS-V as well as the Camaro ZL1.
Right, but here the problem is, it's like with both the CTS-V and, like, okay, you can get the ZL1 starting at 49 grand is probably a perfect price point. And the problem is with the Corvettes and the CTS-V, they're not refined enough to demand such a price point any higher.
Not the current generations.
Yeah, but
generations.
I mean,
that's the
no,
thing.
Not the current generations. They have the power, they have the driving performance to back all their shit up. But the problem is the refinement, and unless they can figure out, a ways to work around it, you know, or just figure out how to fix it in the next generation, I don't see them really trying to demand a higher price because it's not worth it. There's gonna be a point, like, honestly. If the CTS-V was 80 grand, I would say that'd be too much.
Yeah, well, I don't think so. I mean, I think that the next gen, I mean, we talked about this before, but Cadillac needs to move up market, you know. They're, you know, with the ATS, I think that's going to happen because that's going to push the CTS up. I'm not sure about the XTS, but it's definitely going to push the CTS up. And I think at that point, if you're making a high-performance CTS, which is a world car, you know, a global car, they can really charge 70 and upwards for it, and I think that's fair.
You know what, if they truly are going to compete against BMW and make them their crosstown rivals, as opposed to Lincoln, then they have to move it up.
Well, Lincoln doesn't need competition. Lincoln's going to kill itself.
Got their own problems.
Lincoln's
right going
to kill itself. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but you know, traditionally, right?
What if Lincoln does go away? What do you think? What's Ford going to do?
It's not going to go away. They're going to invest in it. What's going to happen at Ford is, Ford is so profitable now. They have so much money. They will have so much money once they roll another year and a half into the bank, as far as revenues are concerned.
Another thing about Lincoln is, they hired on, the Cadillac designer, right? As to run the next generation Lincolns, to design the next generation Lincoln. So you're not going to have this,
Yeah, the MKZ is no longer going to look like a Fusion, you know.
Well, here's the thing, though. Does Ford possess the kind of architecture necessary to?
It does.
They have
The other thing. The other thing is, if Cadillac is truly going to become a global brand or globally recognized and sold brand, then you don't think for a second that that Ford is going to take advantage of its ready-made distribution network.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. And Manny, to your point, they have one global platform that they're going to use, that C platform. In the next 3 years, that's going to be everything. You're going to be able to say that about every single one of their architectures. So the C platform is going to be joined by the Fusion and the Mondeo, and the MKZ platform is going to merge. The MKX and the Edge platform is going to merge for Ford. We already see a merging of the Kuga and the Edge or the Escape.
Right. Well, that's good. But what is Global C? It's not rear wheel drive.
No, it's not. But it doesn't matter. Neither is the Buick Verona. So they don't. Lincoln is never going to compete. I think I obviously said never, but I don't think Lincoln is going to compete in the performance segment.
Yeah, they're just going to.
They're going to be a Lexus competitor, and as long as they make
Cadillac.
Sorry?
They shouldn't be looking at Cadillac.
No, they shouldn't be. They're not. But, whatever. If they can make something that looks good, doesn't necessarily have to drive, as well as it looks. But, that's a different story. But, I think that in the long run, Caddy will need to move up market. They'll need to chase BMW or at least do something that's different from BMW.
I don't think we're going to see, the Cadillac of our dreams within the next 5 years. Honestly, especially when you hear that, with the crossovers that they want, they want to stay on that front wheel drive architecture with the rest of.
That's just terrible. But
so stupid.
Yeah.
But again, it's just taken them way too long to come out with these new Cadillac products.
But it's not only that, Hilton. Actually, I think it's a bigger problem, and I hope that people are still listening by the time we're 92 minutes into the show, because this is a major point. I'll give you an example. Manny, you were at the New York Auto Show. We were there together, right?
Right.
The Hyundai Accent made its debut there, right? Mm-hmm. The Hyundai Accent was already selling right now, while the Chevy Sonic made its debut in January at the Detroit International Auto Show.
It's coming out, I think.
And it's coming in August.
I think it's going to launch in August.
Right, in August. But why? 8 months? It took Hyundai
Alex,
3 months.
Detroit is a small town. Word goes fast. Honestly, if GM didn't reveal the Sonic in January, you would have already been like, oh, look, we have spy photos of
this. That's fine, but the consumer would not have been like, oh, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming,
It's coming. They already have demo vehicles in dealerships.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Says who?
I've seen them.
Maybe in Michigan, but nowhere else.
In Michigan, a select number.
That's different. I'm telling you that's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I don't care about, I care about the consumer. And as far as the consumer is concerned, they saw the Accent get revealed, in April. And now May, June, and June, they're already selling it.
Mark Royce did make a point that, you know, you're not going to be seeing more of these drawn out, from show to final production, right, or showrooms. You're not going to see these long drawn out time periods anymore. Like, but
okay. I believe in hype, but yeah, you guys are right. GM's pushing it.
It's too long.
But at the same, you have, and that would probably explain a lot why we haven't heard anything about the ATS and XTS.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, I mean, you know, even the XTS, it's kind of it's been around for a while now. Was it 3 years ago?
But other than that, it's been like no comment. You're talking about the concept, it's everything else is totally unofficial. And the other part about it is that while Cadillac seems to be getting it right now, Buick with the Regal GS that we've known about since, 2010. So last January, we knew about the Regal GS. And now it's going to just be coming out in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Too long. So they definitely messed up with the Regal GS. I think they kind of got it right with the E-Assist LaCrosse and Regal, where they did it in Chicago, and it's coming out in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting better, at least.
But the bigger thing is that General Motors has to shorten the time period from concept to showroom. You know, the whole thing, and what we're talking about is just a subset. You know, from the time where, you know, they actually have a working functional model, you know, they've got to shorten it from even the drawing board, even before the clay.
It's just the production, the entire production time.
Yeah. You know? It's got to be shortened. You've got to come out a lot faster because.
Well here's the thing, guys. It's like you guys got to understand that, I mean, you're already, two, 3 years, but like, you know, to develop and produce a car is already
short, yeah. Well, yeah, here's my question. I mean, is what we're seeing now with the Regal, with the Aveo / Sonic, is this a byproduct, maybe even with the ATS and the CTS, is this a byproduct of GM's bankruptcy proceedings, and this is just kind of, you know, trailing along because there was that hiatus?
I think we're going to see repercussions probably until 2014.
Okay. Well, hopefully after that they'll be able to figure it out. But
well, we got to remember that, I mean, essentially – the new Buick is nothing but, you know, existing
Opel
product line in different world markets, right?
Yeah.
So, right,
which is something I'm not really fond of.
I'm not fond of it at all.
Yeah. Now the other thing too is how long, you know, traditionally General Motors keeps a product out there in terms of its lifespan.
Well,
its
in case of the Impala.
In case of the Impala, you're looking at 9 years.
Yeah, but that wasn't, you know, I mean, with the Camaro, that wasn't anything. Okay, let's look at the Camaro. In the first generation was, you know, halfway through 66 to 69. Then it went from 70 to 81, which is 12 years. Then it went from 82 to 92, another 10 years.
Right.
Yeah, but
then
there
it
was
went from 93. What?
'93
to 2002, so it's another 10 years. So
yeah, but there was a big there was at least a refresh in the middle there.
But here's, I mean,
yeah, but I mean, look at it compared to Hyundai. Look at the Hyundai Sonata.
Yeah.
Like, what's the life cycle
of
that?
Yeah.
And nowadays, like the modern consumer, look at Ford. Look at what they did with the Edge. I mean, Ford is basically getting the mid-cycle refresh perfect. Like, what it took them 3-4 years. To refresh the Edge inside
but
and
that's
out.
The thing, though, that's the thing that we're all talking about here is that what's happening today. Consumers expect newer products faster, and it doesn't matter if you have certain bottlenecks, if you have certain problems, if you've undergone bankruptcy or whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. They just want new products faster.
Well, I mean, it kind of does with those things. Like, I mean, with the bank, like.
No, I mean, of course it matters, but the consumer doesn't care. They're unforgiving. They don't care. They're not, you know, ADD is prevalent today, so.
Yeah, well, obviously, but who's the cause of that?
Well.
No, but I mean, okay, on the Camaro, for example, you know, theoretically, the 2012 product, I mean, it's been around since 2009. So, you know, in today's Hyundai world, this would be the and Ford, the upcoming Ford world, this would be the refresh year. So they've done a little bit to change the IP, change the steering wheel on the interior for 2012. Nothing has changed on the outside.
Nope.
So, you know, again, like, you know, if you want to be a leader in the industry, you can't be doing shit like this.
And especially after Manny, you and I were sitting at a conference call with the new GM, with Mark Royce and Susan Doherty. Remember this? In January of 2010? And we were listening to them say and preach and say, we're going to make, this is exactly their words, we're going to make the best cars and trucks, you know, in the world. That's pretty
much... In their opinion.
Well, of course, but, you know.
It's subjective, yeah. Obvious.
So, of course, yeah, of course, subjective, but, you know, you got to compete on the global scale, and there's competitors, and there's people who, like us, who will tell you like it is. So, you
know, globally, what, they're still a powerhouse. It's just what they're the way they're doing it sucks.
Yeah, the way that, yeah, exactly. And I don't, maybe just consumers aren't paying attention enough. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's the case. I can't tell. But
no, you know what? When a car company has it right,
there's,
you know,
momentum.
They start,
yeah, and
there's and they start growing.
Yeah, looking forward.
Know, on
Ford,
a global basis,
Hyundai, Kia.
Yeah, Volkswagen now.
And Toyota's been messing up, and look at where they are.
Yeah, you know, Audi. I mean, it's like I said, like, you know, through your bottom line when things are moving in the right direction. You know, if, you know, the one thing about market share, I mean, you can say, okay, we got, you know, consumer market share or commercial market share, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But the one thing about market share is it strips out all the economical pressures that your company has to deal with. So if the economy grows, obviously your numbers are going to grow and you can start to spin it all the way you want. But the one thing about market share is it's a true it's a true report card about how your business model is succeeding. It's generally and if you want to cut that down, you know, a business model is nothing more than, you know, having the right people using the right tools to develop the right strategies.
Right.
You know, that's maybe, in a nutshell.
Maybe it's and, all – we'll go finish what you're going to say.
No, and that's it in a nutshell. And so if your market share is growing you can look at whether it's a division, whether it's a product, whether it's a company, then you're moving in the right direction. If there's a weakness there that your market share is not growing, or if you have a competitor that is growing much faster than you, then you can spin it to believe whatever the hell you want. But the reality is you're not the best, and you don't have the best people, or you don't have the best tools, or you don't have the best strategies. So you better address that now,
Hilton,
not a year later.
I think you're onto something. Maybe this has a lot or everything to do with the rigidity of their system and the centralization of their engineering.
Exactly.
Their brands have absolutely no liberty. All their engineering, all their finances, it's all centralized.
And their planning is as well.
Yeah, it's all centralized.
You have a person.
Just imagine for you know, picture a world, if you will, where it's like Cadillac, Buick, GMC, and Chevrolet worked together yet independently.
Opel.
And Opel and Holden included, in a model that perhaps reflects the way Volkswagen AG works or BMW AG
works. Or Toyota and Lexus.
Yeah, they're getting there. But
No, they're not. They're there, dude. They were there 3 years ago. These guys sit in different buildings.
Hold on. Look at Volkswagen for a second. There's Volkswagen, you know, the brand. And then there's Audi. And then there's Bugatti.
Well, then there's Volkswagen, the parent company as well.
Bentley. Yeah, and Volkswagen, the parent company. And they occasionally borrow bits and pieces from each other's engineering. Like Audi uses, for their R8, a Lamborghini chassis and a Lamborghini engine, I think at first.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You know, for their V10.
Well, the engine's still, you know, they're shared across the board. The 2.0 liter is shared across the board. Their V6s are shared across the board. But platforms are different. Product planning happens independently.
Product planning happens independently. And that's the thing, too. They have their own marketing team. Right. They have their own planning team.
But I think they
have their own designers. They have their own engineers.
But see, the
they
marketing have their teams own are engineers. Different. Right, exactly. That's the key there, I think.
And here's the thing, I've had people, GM people, come up to me and address me like, look, we would rather have it you address our brands by name and not the GM name. Well, it's kind of hard.
Exactly.
When GM is the engineering.
Right.
GM is the finances. GM is everything except, I mean, and even
except
the marketing. GM's the marketing.
Well,
no, because there's centralized marketing too.
Yeah, it is. And everybody, they have, everybody they all report ends to up Joel reporting to Chris. Yeah, or Chris Perry.
Yeah, or Chris Perry. But if anything, the marketing is as independent as it gets. There's like the Don Butler, the GM of Cadillac. He is basically just in charge of marketing, and he oversees what is coming, what the GM engineers are building.
Right, exactly. He doesn't plan the product. He doesn't look at the customer that they're gonna, you know, pursue with a certain product.
And it doesn't matter that Cadillac is the only brand in GM's lineup that utilizes the Sigma platform. It doesn't matter because Cadillac did not design it. GM designed it, and GM, if they wanted to, could make a Sigma everything. I'm actually surprised that they utilized the Zeta platform
for the
Camaro not the Sigma. If they used the Sigma, think how much faster product development would have happened. There probably wouldn't have even been a gap between.
To your point, Manny, this is the trouble that the ATS is facing now with the Alpha, right?
Yes.
Because the platform is taking so long because everybody wants their 2 cents.
But that would happen in the model that we propose anyway, I think. Because what would happen is you're going to have, I mean, look at Toyota and Lexus, for example. All right, those are the two, or that's the one automaker, you know, the two brands, and the two engineering teams that I'm most familiar with having grown up with them. You have Toyota and Lexus for a long time were the same thing. Everything was Toyota in Japan. It was just Lexus in the United States. Now Lexus is a global brand, and they actually sit in a completely different office. They have their own engineers, and Toyota has their own engineers, and you know they sit actually across town.
They decentralized.
Right, but here's the thing. The two engineering teams still collaborate on making platforms and powertrains. That's it. Okay, the design teams are separate, but as we're talking about the Alpha, since that collaboration needs to take place, it's kind of a give-and-take relationship. You know, Toyota needs the following, and Lexus needs the following out of a particular, you know, let's say midsize rear-wheel drive platform. So what we get is, you know, this kind of push and pull. So what happens at Toyota...
Well, okay, hold on.
Let me stop you there.
If that was the case, why is Toyota collaborating with Subaru to build...
Because they bought them. Here's the thing.
Because they bought them.
They bought the majority stake. But here's where the key here is where when they're developing that platform, you know, like the midsize rear-wheel drive platform that I just described, what happens is when they stop agreeing on something is when they split. Okay, they don't try to go and, you know, give and take and push and pull. They say, okay, well, at this point, we're going to call it a platform and you're going to call it a platform. And you're going to take what we've designed so far, and we're going to modify it in our own ways. And that doesn't happen with GM. A platform is developed for one vehicle at GM, like the CTS, and then it's modified, you know, for the STS, for example. Or the Commodore. It's made for that Commodore, and then we're going to say, oh, we're going to make the Camaro. Okay. And then they modify the Zeta chassis. Right. You know, so that's the problem. There isn't that split.
Or they had this platform designed for a specific model. Like the Alpha, for example, allegedly this was going to be Kappa 2. This was going to be the next generation, you know, lightweight, sporty car. But all of a sudden, all the product planners got in the way and they're like, oh, well, we can make this the next rear-wheel drive small sedan for Cadillac. Oh, wait, by the way, let's make it the CTS too. And it just, it builds, and it totally becomes absolutely nothing of what it was in the first place.
I think it's fine if Cadillac were just doing it by itself and Chevy were doing it, you know, for the Camaro. Mm-hmm. But that's obviously not the case. You know, you have different interest groups pulling their own.
Like, what if you would have, like, okay, like, one basic platform, Alpha, and then you had, like, Alpha A, Alpha B.
Well, that's what Toyota does.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that's what I described, basically. At a certain point in a platform development or the powertrain development, you say, okay, well, you don't agree with us as to what we're trying to do, and we don't agree with you. So at this point, we're going to call it quits. You're going to take the product that we've developed together so far, and we're going to take what we've developed so far together, and then we're going to modify it in our own little way for our specific, you know, adaptation and configuration. And I mean, we make it sound simple, and obviously it's simple in thought and it's simple on paper. Whether GM can ever change and really integrate that plan, I'm not sure. I don't know. But you know, the thing that really needs to happen is somebody needs to realize this.
I think someone needs to address it.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll write something up about it.
An old nut bombshell.
I think it's time to wrap this baby up and tuck her in and, you know,
thank
say
you
goodnight.
Thank you for everyone who's waited through, the past 2 hours?
Almost 2 hours, yeah. We're about an hour and 50 minutes or so. Guys, thank you so much for a very interesting conversation, and, you know, you guys make it possible. And
tell your friends.
Exactly. And I'm actually thanking you, Manoli and Hill, not just the listeners, but thank you to the listeners as well, of course. And, of course, as we do at the end of every show, we welcome any and all and many GM employees, you know,
those who are
folks, engineers. Yep.
Thanks for our show scripts, too.
I wrote those.
Manny, you did it. You did it this week.
You're welcome.
Sorry. And I particularly like the way you know, I was allowed to say shit 3 times.
Oh yeah, no, that's 4 actually now, so it's fine.
4, yeah.
You know,
I should have known it was you that wrote it, because if Alex wrote it, I wouldn't be able to curse.
what's written in it? What do you mean? What?
Well, if I go back to the point where, you know, who gives a shit when I said that? Like, Manny wrote that in my script, so I
you're actually reading
it.
The whole time. Why didn't I get the memo?
What do you mean? This whole show is a script. I've been, like,
Manny,
every show I've done, it's a script.
Manny never sends me those.
You or Manny write for me.
Usually it's me, but Manny's been doing it for the last couple of shows.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
all
great.
We do is
just
read.
Keep up the good work, Manny.
Yeah, all we do is just read. We're just really good readers. We should probably work for Audible and, you know, just read their books out loud or something. In the meantime, while we do look for those gigs, you can friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/GM Authority. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter. Manny, what's our Twitter handle again? I forgot.
I believe it's G.
Is it Blue something. Moon? Is that maybe?
G something.
G. All right, so we'll just make it G. G Unit. That's it. G Unit. GM Authority. I'm just kidding. And, of course, you can leave us a review in the iTunes store. If you can leave us a review in the iTunes store, I'd really, really, really appreciate it. And of course, last but not least, you can find the show notes for this show at weekly.gmauthority.com. And to contact us, and perhaps you'd like to tell Hilton that you really despise his cursing on the show and you really want to tone it down, at which point I don't think he'll listen to it. Because
the thing is, I probably will reply, but you're not going to like what I have to say to you.
He's going to reply with a big mulatto. I'm not going to continue that sentence. I'm just going to say, watch Archer. But you can contact us by writing into podcast@gmauthority.com or calling us at 313-355-3GMA. And I think that's all the engineers at GM told us to say today. So with that in mind, the general has been served. Please rate the show in the iTunes store, head on over to iTunes, and search for GM Authority Weekly.